Hello everybody, welcome to episode 85 of the Gordon and Valentine's podcast, which is recorded today on the 8th of October, 2008. First of all, you may all be pleased to know that I'm still alive, because I have been really bad. I haven't recorded a podcast since the 27th of July, 2008, which for me is a really long gap. Sometimes leave a month or two, but I think this is probably the longest gap ever. So now I'm going to go back in time and tell you what I've been up to since I recorded my last podcast. Alright then, so I'll tell you what happened to my car a while ago. If you've been reading my website blog, you'll sort of know bits about the story. But basically, I was driving back home from work on the 1st of August, and I got sort of well over halfway back, and my car just started doing right random things. Basically, at first, I was putting my foot down the accelerator, and the car was just sort of not going. Normally, put your foot in the car, it sort of goes really fast. It just wasn't doing it. And then the next thing, the sort of engine temperature gauge started going sort of really low, back to the middle, really low, back to the middle, and then it went as high as it could possibly go, and then it stopped. So I thought, this isn't right. So I kept on going, the car was still going, and then I could hear it getting really bad, because basically I could sort of steam start coming at the bonnet. So I basically sort of rolled the car down a hill to get it sort of into all the ears, just into Stanford, basically, and sort of jumped out my car and started panicking, and thinking, oh god, the car's gonna go in first, and sort of got myself out of the car and everything else out of the car, basically, in case something did happen, and then sort of waited for the steam to stop coming at the bonnet. But I didn't want to open the bonnet in case it was really major, and then if you open the bonnet, and then, you know, like, fire needs air, so if it had been that, then that would have, well, made it worse. So basically I waited till it sort of cooled, then I put my hand in the bonnet sort of gently, and it sort of cooled in, but opened the bonnet, and I was like, oh my god, basically you've got a cooling tank, it somewhat emptied itself, but unfortunately wasn't an awful lot I could do, because I wasn't a member of the AA, so I had to phone my friends up, who was sort of miles away at the time, so he basically said the best thing to do is sort of leave your car there, lock it all up, and then get a taxi back home, and then sort of try and sort it the next day. But me being me, I thought, well, I could get a taxi, and it's going to cost, like, at least £10, probably more to get from Stanford to my house. I thought, I ain't paying that, because if my car's died, it's going to cost a lot of money to get it fixed, so I thought, I'm going to walk home. So that started off okay, but I got about a mile or two into it, and it started to piss it down, but luckily it wasn't too cold, because it's still only early August, but I got really wet, to say the least. And basically, from Stanford to my house, it was, like, 10 miles of walking, so I didn't get home to about 2:30 in the morning, I think it was, and I didn't really get an awful lot of sleep that night, because I was really, really stressed about my car. And then basically the next day, somebody that Mark knows, a person called Alex, very nicely sort of picked me up and then took me into Stanford, because he's a member of the AA, so we basically claimed that he was in the car with me when it happened, because as the AA says, it's not the car that's a member, it's not the car that's a member, it's the person that's a member. So we basically phoned the AA. Alex had a quick look at it, he knows a lot about cars. We couldn't even get the head and tank with the coolant thing open, basically. And when the AA man did eventually get there, a friend of mine called Andy, he took a while to get there because he couldn't quite work out where it was, even though I sort of described in great detail where it was, but oh well, he still got them in the end. He basically managed to eventually get the head and tank open for lots of effort and sort of looked at it and then looked at me and thought, and then said, what the hell have you done to your car? Because basically the tank had emptied itself and it's sort of full of gunk. So you sort of basically put some water around just to see what happened, and the water just wouldn't pump around the engine properly. So he said, well, I wouldn't advise you to drive it. So basically then after that, he basically told me from Stanford to this sort of garage that I always use, which again was a bit weird because I've never ever been towed before in my entire life. So that was basically Saturday, and then the garage sort of phoned me in the next couple of days basically to say that basically, as I'd imagine, the cooler tank was totally had it, and asked me if I'd put anything else in the tank other than water and what you meant to put in it. I was like, no. So I was like, okay then. So basically they had the car for over 2 weeks, I think it was, sort of looking at it, sort of getting so far and then taking a step back, doing more, taking another step back. But they got it going in the end, and must admit it did cost me quite a lot of money. It cost me, now I'm just trying to read my own website, but I know I've got it somewhere on it. How much did it cost me? It cost me, ooh, just over £500, but admittedly they could have charged me a lot more because they'd had it for a long time. Basically, they had to put a new, well actually first they had to do head gasket tests more than once, because they thought, well, the engine can't get that hot and not break anything. They were totally amazed that I didn't actually totally fuck the engine, to be honest. But basically, they did lots of tests on it, and first of all, they put a new header tank and stuff on it, but that was, as I said, totally not. Then we filled it up with just water, pumped water around it. The engine was still running too far, too hot. So then after that, they basically put a new grill fan thing on the front of the car. That was like another 90-odd quid, and again, it was still running too hot. They'd also replaced the thermostat, but it just wasn't quite working. And this is sort of near the end, because they phoned me up saying it might have had it, basically. But then, they sort of, when I was up at the garage looking at it with them, they sort of found something. It's basically, of course, the fan and everything need to be placed as well, beforehand anyway, but basically a bit of plastic in it where the thermostat sort of goes in and out, and a bit of plastic somehow broke, so when the thermostat was thinking it was turning it off, it wasn't, so basically it wasn't sort of letting the water in and out of the engine, apparently, so the fan and stuff wasn't cut off. So basically, when they fixed all that, the car was fixed, basically, so now the engine is sort of running well. It's not had any problems, and I've had it now back for a month and a bit, and it's been running fine ever since. But basically, they keep telling me I've got to keep a sort of check of the header tank, and then keep make sure it's not running down or anything, and if it does play up, to take it back. So basically, I'm really pleased I got my car back. As I said, I was getting really stressed out, thinking I'm not going to have a car, what am I going to do? But luckily, one of my friends, Mark, has two cars, so I was either driving his normal car or four-wheel drive. The four-wheel drive's quite fun to drive, but in fact, it's an automatic, and it's also from an import from Japan or somewhere, so the indicators and everything are completely opposite side. It really confuses me. And when I first got back into the car, I was so nervous about it breaking down, if it made any little noise, it was my car! Basically, when I got my little baby back, and I'm really pleased to get it back, because I know you may not think so, but when it's your first ever car, you do get awfully attached to it. And as well, a lot of people said 500 quid is a lot to spend and get an old car going, but basically, to spend 500 quid, or basically to buy my car, and if I hadn't, I'd have still needed to pay the garage all the money they had spent just to sort of look at it, so that would still cost a lot of money. So it's still cheaper getting that car fixed than it would have been buying another second-hand car, so I'm pleased I got my car back, to say the least. So that's basically my car story out the way. Now to talk about some other stuff that I've been up to. Right, I better apologise at first if that bit of the podcast was a little bit faster, sort of rabbiting on as I do and getting a bit tongue-tied. Anyway, another thing that I've been up to is I've now got a GPS for my bike, which is almost the best way to describe it. It's like a sat-nav for your bike, and you may be thinking, what the hell do you need a sat-nav for your bike for? It's basically, as me and Michael said before, hoping to do the end-to-end cycle from John O'Groats to Land's End next year, so we're sort of buying bits and pieces for it. So basically, it's a really clever thing. It's sort of, when you start it up, it's sort of, so it's a good map of where you are, and they can program it to get you somewhere by your bike, and it will sort of tell you the best way to go. So it's like a sat nav, it will say turn right at such and such to do left, and also it will tell you what speed you're going at, it will tell you how high up you are, how low down you are, and you can have a little funky graphics as you're going up and down all the hills. And also, if you connect it onto your computer, then it will transfer all over onto your computer, or you can put it on the line, and also, since it's got GPS, it'll draw a nice red line of basically where you've been, and it's really accurate, it's quite scary. If you can turn left, it'll slow left, and if you sort of meander over the road again, if you look at it in Google Maps, it'll slow the red lines up going from side to side. So it's amazing what you can do. If it was 300 and something quid, which it's basically, you could buy a laptop for that, but I think it's value for money, because it means I won't get lost again, because when me and Mike tried cycling from here down to London, we kept on getting lost, even with maps, so it means if you got this and a normal map, you can't get lost. Touch wood. At some point, I'll need to sort of stick a link on the website of what the GPS can actually do, but I can't really, all the ones I've done I can't do so far, but it's that accurate. If I did put it online, you'd know my house, you'd sort of see the cycle starting from outside my house, basically, so when I do it, I'll have to sort of start it off on another bit of the village and then finish that bit so you can't work out where I actually live. And it's also got a heart monitor on it, so it sort of shows what your heart's doing and stuff, which is quite weird actually, sort of looking at it and seeing your heart go boom 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 when you're sort of going up a hill and back down again when you sort of slow down. So that's really good. And also, another reason we got it was we might want to do some more geocaching, I think that's how you pronounce it, basically. Just like a worldwide treasure hunt where you basically people hide things, and if you go on there's a website for it, which is linked on my website, which if you type in your postcode, it'll sort of tell you the nearest ones are, and it'll give you clues how to find it, and also give you the sort of the longitude and latitude, whatever the hell they call it, basically coordinates for finding it. And if you've got your GPS, it's really easy to find, but you can sort of type it in, and when you get to where it is, it'll basically say that you're there. So that's something else that I've been up to, and I'll just have a little think in my little brain and think what else I've been up to. Oh yeah, I also turned 29, yes, 29, God, I'm getting old, on the 29th of September, which will never happen again, being 29 on the 29th. I am pleased to say that I don't think I look 29, but it is really scary to think that I'm 29, which is also more scary to think this, my own website, has been gone since 1998, so at that point I was sort of 16, 17 and still at college, which in itself is really quite scary. I had a good birthday. On my actual day of my birthday, I didn't do an awful lot, but what I did was on the Sunday before my birthday, which had been the 28th, I went to Mike's house and we sort of wished me happy birthday and everything else, because normally I don't see him that day, so that was very nice. For my birthday, got my Wetsuit Lads logo made up, which is really quite good. It's sort of a cartoony version of me and Mike wearing wetsuits, which if you look on my Wetsuit Lads website, which is, pardon me, www.wetsuitlads.co.uk, and if you go into the forum, then Pongs is a bit under there about it, basically, so I'm really impressed by it. I also got my Wetsuit Lads t-shirt made up, just to see what the logo looks like. Unfortunately, it didn't come out quite as well as I was hoping, but we're basically going to have a look on the internet and see who does sort of t-shirts, and basically get a number of people to sort of do them, and then see what one looks the best. The idea is at some point you may end up seeing Wetsuit Lads t-shirts, hoodies, and underwear and stuff with that sort of cartoon on it. That's just something that we're thinking about. And the only other thing I've been up to off the top of my head was one on Sunday, me and Mike went down to Cambridge to see our friends Jack and Amir that we hadn't seen for quite a long time since the cycle down. We went into some place in Cambridge to get food, which I wasn't really happy or impressed by it. I'm glad I went, but I wouldn't go again. I can't remember the name of it, so I can't slate it off. Well, I could slate it off, but I don't know the name of it. Basically, it's everything they sell was chicken, which is a good idea, but just the whole way it worked, it was like a restaurant, but it wasn't. There's socially a table, which is fair enough, but then you have to take the menu up, and then it becomes like fast food. You have to sort of stand in a queue and tell them what you want and what table you're going to be sitting at, and then they'll bring the food out to you, which is a bit weird, because to me, as for the restaurant, you go and you sit down, they come up, say, what would you like, and they take it to you, but it didn't happen. Also, another thing that put Mike off his dinner was he went to the toilet, and the first thing of all, urinals aren't working, which is fair enough. But then he went to, use an old toilet and have a pee. Basically, somebody left a big fat poo in it, and apparently put him off his dinner. But he couldn't flush it because apparently there was no water in the toilet, which wasn't very nice at all. So I won't go there again, but I'm glad I went because it was somewhere different to go. But I think I'll stick to nice sort of old pubs and pizza and somewhere that you know what you're going to expect. So, I can't think of anything else for this podcast, so that's it for now, and I'll speak to you when I get around to recording my next podcast. Love you all, bye-bye, bye!